Please welcome Chef Simone.
Thanks. Hello. Thanks, John. Hello, everyone. Awesome. I'm Shed, and I'm really excited to be here tonight with you guys. Your mind is incredible, and what makes us different from all other animals as humans is that we are able to think up an idea, and then, because our brains are fantastic, we can solve the problems involved in getting that idea out. And those two things mean that it's just anything is possible, and that's in you. And especially because you're scanners and you're here and you're interested, you've got all the resources in your brain available to do anything. And tonight I'm going to show you that a simple process, and this is the process, ideas plus action equals adventure. And both of those are really important. The ideas, which you already have, the action, which we all find much more challenging. And adventures in life can make us fulfilled, they can make us grow, they can also make us rich. Great, depends, but of course money isn't everything, but adventures are, because we've only got 50 years on the planet, so let's burn bright. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about my background, just to sort of frame what I'm going to talk about, which is how to implement ideas. After university, as John said, I, in fact, went to Disney World and I worked as a 16th century gentleman. And it was a really surreal time of my life, but wonderful, because it showed me that capitalism and also giving good to people and entertaining people could go hand in hand. And this sort of really turned me on, and I thought, okay, if I have to go into the capitalist regime, then maybe I'll do something in the entertainment business. And I used to have people come up to me in America, Americans, who were visiting where I was in Disney World, which was a little UK mock-up with a pub, and they'd say to me, "Sheridan, do you really speak like that?" And I'd say, "No, madam, I'm actually from Ohio, and Disney has trained me to talk like this." And they'd say, "Gee, that's amazing." I'd say, no, not really. Because only 11% of Americans actually have passports, so most of them don't know about the rest of the world. So we used to educate them about that. And after Disney, I came back to this country, and I was gripped with wanting to get a job in entertainment. And I saw an advert for Planet 24. And at the time, that was making, it was a television company making The Big Breakfast and The Word. Do you all know that? Do you remember those shows? They were very groundbreaking and exciting at the time. And I thought, and this is one of the ethoses that I live by, okay, there's going to be a lot of people going for that job. How can I raise myself above everyone else? So what I did was I sent pizzas to the boss with messages on at lunchtime. And one of them said, "Wanted to give you a pizza, my mind," and say, "Yeah, terrible, get ready, there's a lot worse coming up." So they thought, who is this oddball at first? Then what I did was I researched the boss so much that I knew that he loved Coronation Street and he loved one character. So I wrote to the actor that played that character, who was Johnny Briggs playing Mike Baldwin, and I got him to send me a signed photo, and then we sent that to the boss. And it said, "Hiya Shed, he's right up your street." And of course, the boss, I got the boss's attention above all the other 2,000 people going for the job. But of course, as well as attention, you've got to deliver. So then when they invited me in, I then took them scripts and ideas and lots of things, and eventually they hired me, and I had an amazing time on The Big Breakfast. And I started giving Chris Evans his sandwich, and at the end I was running the show after 6 years. And it was, what was really cool about it is it taught me that when you get brilliant people around you, your idea can suddenly flourish. So I go into my boss and say, "Hey boss, I've got a great idea for a new competition." He'd say, "Go on, Shed," he'd sort of look up to the ceiling. And I'd say, "Okay, we're going to do a competition called Poultry in Motion. I'm going to put Dermot O'Leary in a hot air balloon 50 foot above the garden, and it's going to be hovering, and he's going to be in a chicken outfit, and we're going to fire rubber chickens up to him, and he's got to catch the chickens, and all we have to do is ask the viewers how many chickens is he going to catch today, and it's a little game." And he'd pause for a second and say, "You know what, Shed, that's not bad." Amazingly enough, "Go ahead." And then suddenly, graphics would help me with the graphics, and costuming would make the chicken outfit, and props would make the catapult. And I realised that my idea in my brain suddenly got brought to life because of all these brilliant people around me. So that's a really important skill I've then taken on into my further life. After Big Breakfast, I set up my own production company, a television company, and I made a documentary that was to bring great, let's say, trauma, let's say notoriety, and I'll talk about that a bit later on. And after that, my TV career was a little bit on the skids, and I was sort of out of television for a while because I was persona non grata. But then Channel 4 came back to me and said, would you reversion Big Brother? And I don't know, you're all intellectuals, so I don't know what you think about Big Brother, but we all have our opinion on Big Brother. And all I can say is it was a thrilling ride to be part of a phenomenon. And after Big Brother, I then decided, okay, the great thing about our mind is, if you can think up ideas for, say, TV, you can actually think up ideas for any part of business. And all that matters really is what excites you, what turns you on. And one day, I got turned on by a certain object, and it brought me to go into novelty goods. And to date, as John said, I've had really a massive success in the novelty gifts area, and it's sort of been astonishing. But what I did was I stumbled on the Secret Santa market. So if you keep something under $4.99, all you've got to do is, Philip's got to think, oh, that's vaguely amusing for John, I'll put it in my bag. It's not a big decision. And so I come up with these ideas and I get them made, often in China, and I'll talk about that too. And I'll just show you one hot off the presses that's about to come out, which I'm having legal wrangles with. This is the Chav Stick. This is the prototype and the visualisation, and basically I've taken the idea of a chapstick, which is a lip balm, and I've just taken something from the ether, which is the chavs, and I'm in trouble with both Burberry and chapstick with this one. So it's nice to be in trouble from two sides. It's sort of unusual for me, normally in trouble from one side. I think it's amazing and thrilling that you're here tonight, because more than ever, your brain is important, because knowledge is dead. And it's my contention that because you've got the internet these days, actually, we can all access the same knowledge, and we can all access it very quickly. So therefore, the competitive advantage for you or your business doesn't come from what you know, it comes from what you're creating and what's coming next, because you've got to constantly satisfy the customer. And because of the internet, once you've thought of something new, then everyone else knows about it and will probably copy it. So there's even more incentive to, again, think of something new. So I think that knowledge is dead, and there's a nice morbid picture of death and saying hi, scanners. And following on the morbid theme, execution is key. As John says, we all have ideas. We're clever, we're thinking, we have them in the bath, we have them on the toilet. And appropriate that I'm between the toilets and the kid area tonight, it seems rather poetic. But what's really important is that you're a completer finisher. And there are lots of different tricks you can use on yourself to make yourself a completer finisher, because we all have the capability, it's just there are constraints on why we don't. So I talk about those. And as Yoda said, there is no try. It's good to quote an alien, green alien, isn't it? rather than a president. There is no try. There is only do or not do. And that's a bit harsh. I don't quite agree with Yoda. I think, actually, the most important thing is to start. Because when you start, even if you have a goal, you might veer away and go to a different direction of your goal. It doesn't matter, because the end point will be something satisfying to you, because you're guiding it anyway. So actually, there's some truth to what Yoda says, but the most important thing is just to start. So let's talk about actual tricks. Trick one, unusual actions get unusual results. So I'll tell you about something from my life. My name hasn't always been Shed Samov, and when I was born, my mother called me Sheridan because she wanted me to be unique and also bullied at school. But last year, I read a book that really moved me and inspired me, and I'm sure you know it because you're very clever. Do you know The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins? Yeah, brilliant. So I read that book and I thought, wow, that word and those three little letters, G-O-D, are mind-blowing, and they have an emotional resonance to us all that's very personal. And I began to think about the concept of God and how if you put another word in front of God, it changes its meaning. So if you put love God or Greek God or sex God, which of course, yeah, there it is, then it has a different meaning. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And then I got to thinking, has anyone ever changed their name to God? And was it allowed? And what I really wanted was a credit card with the name God, because I thought that'd be really cool to show girls at parties. So I went round lots of solicitors, and many of them said, get out. And lots of them said, what you're doing is outrageous. We're not going to go through with the deed. But one of them said yes. And here is the actual deed. And I got it signed by a fantastic solicitor who took pity on me in North London. And he actually, when I went to see him, he said, are you ready to sign now? And it took me by surprise. And I had to sign as God, which was a strange moment, because really I wanted light to come from the window and hit the paper and have amazing gold ink. But I only had a biro, so I made do. And I signed my previous name. And so then that was a sort of success. I was God. But as I say, for me, real success was to have a credit card. So when you want the credit card in your change name, you have to put your new name to your bank. So I sent in my deed to my bank, and let's just say my bank manager didn't see the funny side. He phoned me up and he said, Mr. Samove. And I said, it's God now. Do you mind? He said, Mr. Samove, he really didn't have a sense of humour, bless him. He said, Mr. Samove, we can't change your name to God, even though the deed is completely fine. And I said, why not? And he said, our banking system needs two names. And I said, this is the computer saying no, isn't it? We built the banking system. You can see I've only got one name now. It's all legit. Please, could you sort it out? And he was very intransigent. He said, no, absolutely not. And I said, well, what about Madonna? She's only got one name. And fair dues to the man, he checked already in the office. And he said to me, I've already looked into that. In America, she's Madonna Ciccone on the banking system. So I thought, okay, I've got to give my hats off to the man slightly. But then a brainwave hit me and I said, fine, put me down as Almighty God. Because then it'll still work on the credit card, wouldn't it? Be Mr. A God. And he was like really annoyed. She went away. And a week later, he came back to me. And again, he said, Mr. Samove. And I didn't say, it's Almighty God now, keep up. And he said, Mr. Samove, we've taken your case to the highest levels of HSBC. We've talked to the board and all our top legal advisers. And I thought, wow, this is progress, because normally I get a £15 automated fine letter from HSBC. So to be sort of talked about and then to know my name, it must be progress, mustn't it? And they sent me this letter, and this letter is a classic letter, and basically says that if I carry on trying to change my name to God, they're going to cancel all my accounts. I've been in with them 20 years, both my personal and business accounts. And at this stage, the press got wind of the story. And look what fun the press had with the story. So there you see, bank snubs God. No one has ever changed their name to God before, so I decided to give it a go. And it even ended up in The Sun, no bank for God. And the media really liked this story because it was quite fun. But in the end, I had to change my name back to Sheridan Samove because I didn't want all my accounts to collapse. It was very annoying. But I think that does prove that if you go for unusual actions, you definitely do get unusual results. And it also proves that HSBC stands for has small balls, clearly. Now, ideas. John was talking about how, we were talking before, I was talking before about how ideas can sometimes easily get quashed and they can shrivel. And it's my contention they're like babies, and you've got to nurture them and give them unconditional love. You really must breathe life into them. So it's very important that you don't step on an idea in its early stage, because it'll often grow into something that you didn't even think of. So that's important to remember. Trick two, go around barriers. There will be massive barriers whenever you start making an idea. And it's a little bit daunting, but there's a way of minimising those barriers, and we'll talk about that. So there is good news, but you have to sometimes go around barriers. Now, my novelty gift empire, for want of a better word, came about when I saw an object. And this is the object. It was a pair of juggling boobs. Here they are. They're two silicon boobs, and you juggle with them. The clue is in the title. This blew me away for three reasons. One, someone had thought about making a novelty gift called juggling boobs. Two, someone's bothered to design it, to get it made in China. Three, someone's distributed it and retailed it. For that, incredible. And this picture always makes me laugh. It's like the song, it brings to mind the song, "He's got the whole world in his hands." Maybe that's just me. So I thought, wow, cool, I want to do something like this. And I went round to lots of different companies with visualizations, because one of the very important things about bringing an idea to life is A, partner with an expert if you can, and B, bring it to life in some way. So I took a prototype, and I'll show you the first ever prototype I took, and it got rejected, but I'm gutted. It's based on an 80s puzzle. Brace yourself. If you're easily offended, look away now. Here is my pubic cube. So picture this. These novelty gift companies exist, and they're serious business. They turn over millions and millions of pounds. So I was in a boardroom, and what's funny is when you're talking about something humorous in a serious manner. So I'd pitch this, and I'd say, "Hey, look at my pubic cube," and I'd open it up, and it was like that. And it's got lots of different willies on it. And you can imagine me downloading these in my flat on my own. And my mum is so proud. If my hard drive ever got taken to PC World, I'd be sunk. So I'd say, let's make this. It would go down really well, a pubis cube, won't it? And to a man, every company I went to said, no shed, we don't like it. So I said, no problem. When you get a rejection, you have to go again. You have to pitch another idea in the same meeting. Never go to a meeting with one idea. So I said, how about a doorknob? Simple idea, really cheap to make. Two sides, on that side it says the Love Doctor is in, first examination free. It's a knob that goes on door. We could also do door knockers, they're shaped like boobs. Brilliant, no shed. So when you get multiple rejections, you think, how can I go around this barrier? And I got to thinking, maybe the reason why everyone was saying no was because I hadn't yet proven to the novelty gift market that I could deliver something that would sell. At the moment, they were only just prototypes and visualizations. So what I did was, I found a manufacturer in China, and I made my own product. And what I made was some adult sweets, as John mentioned. And here are my adult sweets. They are clitoris all sorts. And I'm really proud that I did these. And what's incredible, you phone up the companies in this country and they say, yeah, no problem, it's £10,000. Actually, they don't say no problem, they say, it'll cost you £10,000 and, oh, I'm not sure if we can mould them. And then you phone China and go, when do you want it, how many, and it'll be 500 quid or a grand. And they always groan when I phone up, because I only say I want 500 minimum order quantity at first, because I just want to test the market. But they do it, bless them. And so I was working with a lady in China, and she said to me, what shape do you want this sweet? And so I phoned someone for help. I said, hello, mum. And Samantha said, what do you want, Shed? And I said, mum, would you mind helping me with the mould, my clitoris all sorts? Hello, mum. Mum didn't help me, although she is unconditionally supportive and a brilliant mum and very inspiring. So I had to sort of make them myself, and I think you'll agree I did quite a good job. They're an homage to the clitoris. So I made them in three flavours, strawberry, lemon and lime. Is Scanner's Night normally this highbrow? And these sold phenomenally well, mostly to a lesbian website called Diva. And because they sold so well, I heard on the grapevine that Anne Summers were thinking of doing a very similar product with the same name. So you're going to ask about this, I'm sure, and this always comes up in ideas talks about protection. And I would say, if you're worried about protection, then maybe get a trademark. So I went to the trademark office and I filed clitoris all sorts TM, and they came back to me, and it's very simple to do online, it's 200 quid. They came back to me with this letter, and this letter is quite a classic letter. Here it is, in all its glory. And it's written by a trademark officer called Virginia, funnily enough. And poor old Virginia must have had quite an exciting day in the office that day, because she wrote to me saying she's rejecting my application for a trademark for clitoris all sorts, and here she goes into great detail about why she's rejecting it. Bless her heart. You know, she must normally deal with Widgets Limited, TM, but she's dealing with something a bit more highbrow today. And she says, the expression clitoris all sorts, the first part means a part of a woman's genitals, which you can't argue with, can you? But down below, down at the bottom, we can argue with this, and it says, she says, that it's contrary to accepted principles of morality. Now, who made the Trademark Office the arbiters of morality? And this got me riled, and I thought, this is a big barrier. And I'm going to try and go round this barrier, or in fact, I'm going to try and steamroller through. So what's wonderful about the trademark process is you can go to a hearing. So I hired a trademark attorney, and I found myself at the Trademark Office, a big austere building, and there in a boardroom with a man in a suit there who was the trademark officer, another man in a suit there who was my trademark attorney, and they were discussing intellectually whether clitoris all sorts should be a trademark or not. And I was looking at the scene thinking, I could have done so much with my life. I could have had a go at cancer, global warming needs solving, but no, I'm here trying to get clitoris all sorts trademarked in my own way. Life is good. And so after the hearing, even though my trademark attorney made a valiant attempt to get it trademarked, the Trademark Office gave a final rejection. And I was so annoyed, and I couldn't go any further. And I didn't think I could go any further, but once again I went around and I filed another trademark, and this time it was for the phrase, the Trademark Office has no sense of humour. And they phoned me up, they said, it's you again, isn't it? I said, yeah, it is me. And they said, stop sending us these frivolous trademarks. I said, the first one wasn't frivolous, it was a very successful confectionery range, and the second one I need for a book, which was the truth, because I was writing at the time. And they said, no, you can't have this one either. And I wrote lots of letters, and I was dogged. And after a while, they couldn't find any legal reason not to give it to me. So I'm really proud to show you that the Trademark Office has no sense of humour has been trademarked. Woo! Cheers. Small victory for a little man, but, you know, not bad. And the excitement didn't stop there. I'm sure you recognise this. This is the ITMA Review, which is the Institute of Trademark Attorneys magazine. To a trademark attorney, this is a bit like Heat. Or pornography. It's really exciting to them. And on page 5, down the bottom there, we're Trademark of the Month. Not bad. Woo! So not an Oscar, but yeah, very good. So that just shows you that there's always a way forward. There's always a way around. Trick 3. An easy way to come up with a new idea. Take something that's already existing, twist it slightly. I saw these candles in Marks and Spencer's. Very simple candles. They spell happy birthday when you put each candle, which has one letter, in a certain configuration on the cake. Easy. Now, at the time, there were lots of people doing this. They had anodyne phrases like happy birthday and congratulations. No one was doing anything more interesting. And I thought, okay, I just got to twist that. So here are my versions. I did lost count, 21 again. There they are on the cake. And my bestseller, you're old. And miraculously, these have sold around 250,000 units. And they just fly off the shelves. They do really well. And because they were so successful, we did some more. We did 30-ish, 40-ish, and don't ask. And what's weird, when you have an idea and you send it out into the world, it's a little bit like your child. You never know how humans are going to interact with it or look at it or think about it. And one customer sent me a letter and she said, Shed, I love your candles, but recently I did something different with them. And I said, oh, interesting, as I read on. And she said, I bought your lost count candles, but I had a friend's birthday recently, and I rearranged the letters to give me a different phrase. I can tell you're a clever audience, brilliant. You get it. She did this. Now, what astonished me about that was, A, humans are brilliant, aren't they? They always take it. They can always twist it. But also, it's very rare for one of my products to be brought to an even lower level. There you go. Another example of twisting something. I took the idea of glasses, and I made my own glasses. These are just different type of glasses, but I was always obsessed with the SAS. And so I made these, and these are my hydro identity specs. So when you have a photo taken, it looks like you're in the SAS. So there's my friend Simon. It's a simple idea. So if you're having a group photo, you pop these on, and then when it's developed, people are like, oh my goodness, who's that with their identity blanked out? They must be an international man or woman of mystery. And of course, these are perfect if you haven't got Photoshop and you want to upload nude photos of yourself to the internet, which I'm sure, you know, this crowd, we're a very sexy crowd. We definitely do. So you don't need to spend 800 quid on Photoshop. Just pop these on, get your kit off. Your boss will never know you're a pervert. So that's another example of twisting. Big tip, partner with an expert. This is, I would say, perhaps the biggest way to make things easier when you're bringing an idea to market, especially if you've got no expertise in that market. You know what it's like. Someone's worked in an area, let's say plumbing or air conditioning or any area, novelty goods, doctor. They've worked in it for 20 years. You arrive with your brilliant idea, inverted commas, and they're like, sorry, who are you? Well, what you've got to do is you've got to get them on board, because they'll know everyone in the industry. You've got to prove to them that you've got value and you bring value. So I think it's really important to partner with an expert. And what was brilliant about my clitoris all sorts, it gave me almost an entree to the gift industry. People saw that I'd done it and it sold it well, and then they were eager to hear my next idea. So I said, okay, here's my next idea. It's based on this toy. Do anyone remember this? Yeah, brilliant. Very simple idea. It's based on a man without hair, and there's magnetic iron filings, and you make him have different hairstyles, and there's suggested hairstyles down the side. So I got to thinking, I'm in this sort of sexy area. What other parts have hair? And you're way ahead of me. So this is my first ever prototype. And then look at this. And again, a big tip. I'm not an expert designer, and as you can see, that's a really crude visualization, but it just brings it to life. And when you bring it to life, A, it communicates it clearly, and B, it makes it much more robust to people knocking it down. If you tell someone and say, oh, I've got this idea, I'm going to make a beaver version of the Woolly Willy, they might go, that's rubbish, and it might fritter away into the ether. But if you've got it in front of you, they might go, yeah, what's good about that is, and what's bad about that, you maybe should change it like this. It suddenly grows more, and it's much, much more strong and able to resist any negativity. So when brilliant designers got involved from that crude prototype, look what happened. How cool is that? And this is sold tens of thousands of units all around the world, and this is my designer beaver, and basically it's a woman's midriff, as you see, and you make her have different hairstyles, and down the side we made fun hairstyles, like there's a square there which we call the chaplain. We were going to call it the Hitler, but we thought that was really bad taste. This did fantastically, and it even had a brush with fame. Again, when you send a product out, you never know how it's going to be reacted to. And this ended up on a TV show, independent of me, completely independent of me. And look what happened. Do you know who this is, actually? I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Paris Hilton, arguably the most famous person in the world. And look what happened when she had a show in this country, and it was all about finding her new best friend, and one day she set her friends a task to find her a present.
Tonight, I find out how well my BBFs know me.
What the hell is this?
So your new hopeful best friends have been shopping for you?
Yes.
To buy the girl who's got everything a present.
It's more about the thought that counts.
How we suddenly sort of make your own beaver set. Which, first of all, I did think, oh god, I think it's a bit too cringy, but I think Paris will get it. I think she'll find it funny.
Here's your last present.
Okay.
Not sure that's at all appropriate.
It's a magnetic designer beaver. She should be able to design her own design before she has it done.
Mine would have none of the dust.
That's not my favourite thing, but I think it's funny.
If my parents were sitting there and I opened it in front of them, I would have, like, died. My mom would have been disgusted.
So let's just recap what Paris says at the end there. She says,
if my parents were sitting there and I opened it in front of them, I would have, like, died.
My mum would have been disgusted about a quite innocuous plastic beaver, as opposed to me shagging lots of men across the internet worldwide. Priorities, Paris. So anyway, when that was on TV, it did really well, and it got lots of interest, and the sales of the beaver went high up. Let's talk about why some people don't start an idea. Excuses, which actually are valid reasons. So I want to reframe, as the psychologists say, these things as valid reasons, because these are reasons why we don't start our brilliant ideas, and we all have fantastic ideas. First one, and I'm going to knock each one down quickly, and I can always go into more detail if you want, but later on. So time. We're all time poor. We're all busy. We're all successful. So crikey, we haven't got time. So my theory on this is outsource. Crikey, India, China, America, and students on Gumtree are begging to do your work for you. So there's always a way of just finding on the internet somebody, either in, if you work in a company, in your company, or outside, to do something for you for a small amount of money or even a share of your profit. So always look to outsource. That's my first tip. Second thing, contacts. People say, I haven't got the contacts in the industry. No excuses anymore. Google gives you contacts. Crikey. Plus you've got your Facebook network, plus you've got your Twitter probably. But even if you haven't got your Facebook and Twitter, Google lets you find an expert in a couple of clicks. No excuses. Find the experts, show them you've got value, show them that you can bring either adventure or money to their life, and they'll partner with you. Thieves. People worry a lot and ask me a lot about someone's going to steal my idea if I talk about it. This is a common and understandable worry, but here's my answer to it. Take a chill pill. There is only one you. Now, what is really cool about being us is that because of our past experience and personality and present personality, we are completely and utterly unique. And yes, it is a cliche, but here's the proof. If we all had the same idea now, or we discussed the same idea, and five of us, or even all of us, implemented it, it would come out differently. Every single one of our ideas would come out differently, even though it was the same idea. So don't worry so much about someone stealing your idea. A, they're probably not interested. B, even if they do it, they might not implement it as well as you. C, just get on with yours quickly while you can. It's really important. Does that sort of make sense? Is that fair? I really believe in that. Of course, if you think up the water engine, A, come and see me, and B, we'll go down the patent office. But if you haven't thought up the water engine, chances are someone's thought of the same idea, because at the moment we're all chasing ideas in the world. So don't worry about that. Just do it better. Trick five, break a rule. This is a really powerful trick. I saw this phenomenon happening, and it rocked my world. Who knows Second Life? Yeah, brilliant. Second Life is an online game that is like a second world, and people play it perhaps if they haven't got a first life. Maybe that's a bit harsh. And in Second Life, they have their own currency. And look at this, right? The currency, which is called Linden dollars, is being sold on eBay for real money. Now, real money, I got to thinking, is actually a promise. So when we give each other a £10 note, it's not actually worth £10. It's just only worth that if we both believe it's worth £10. So this is layers upon layers. Digital currency being sold for a promise. Wow. Incredible. So I got to thinking, okay, cool. I remembered this. When I was 18, I saw this in a history book. And this is a man going to buy a loaf of bread in the Depression. And inflation had gone up so high that he needed all that cash to buy a loaf of bread. And I just thought, oh my goodness, say the economic world suddenly had a downturn. The money in our pocket could become worthless. And I thought, we should really be carrying around gold bars, because then there's only a finite amount of gold and it would have a fixed value. But the money in our pocket, doesn't have a fixed value, as we all know, from exchange rates. So I thought, I wonder if I can make my own money. And I researched it, and it's not illegal, contrary to what I thought. So I designed it up, and I also found that gift vouchers were actually people's money, because they're just a promise, a piece of paper that's a promise. And here is my finished article. I made my money into the currency One Ego. And I found a printing press that was in Brighton, a special printing press called the Heidelberg Press, that made fantastic printing for currency. And I went down, I chose the paper, and I when I designed my note, I put lots of different details from my life on it, and I doubled it as my business card. So the serial number there you'll see is my phone number, and my family's names around the Big Brother eye, which obviously refers to my time at Big Brother, and my star sign is on the left, even though it looks like a dog, it's meant to be a bull. It was really exciting when it came out, and on the back is some of my idols. There's Walt Disney, and there's Archimedes having the Eureka moment, which is of course so important. And I thought, cool, as an experiment, that's turned out well, but really I want to see if it has value. And here's another thing. things are just about perception. And Damien Hirst, when he makes his skull, and he makes it, he gets a skull and he covers it in diamonds, and it's 5 million quid it costs him, he then sells it for 50. Well, it's not worth 50, but people say it's worth 50. Oh my goodness, that's odd. So I put it on eBay, this note, and remarkably, it sells. And currently, one ego is equivalent to around 93p, which is a better exchange rate than the euro. So that's not bad, is it? And quite astonishing. And then this led me on to another trick, which is, if you have a success, extend your success into another range. You've done the hard work, people enjoy this, so you just twist it slightly, like my other tip. And so I made a coin. And here's my coin, this is the shed 2 cents. And I wanted it to have heads and tails. So so I found a really good sculptor in the States, because the exchange rate was low, and so he did them quite pretty cheaply. And he said to me, send me a picture of your face. And so I did, and then he said, send me a picture of your bum. And I said, no, just do a generic bum. No one will recognize it if it's not my bum, because only the hallowed lucky few have seen my bum. And he said, no, Shed, I really need a picture of your bum. So one weekend I found myself taking my shorts down and then having my brother take a picture of my bare buttock, sending a JPEG to a strange man in America. I just hope he hasn't got it massively blown up on his wall somewhere. Probably not. But I put this on eBay and it sells phenomenally well, upwards of 3-4 quid. And we put on the back there, the bottom might fall out of this market, just for the crack, really. Can't work with me. another example of extending something that's a success, I got to thinking, on sitcoms, when someone walks in, the laughter track laughs or claps. And I thought, this is funny, and wouldn't it be funny if you could do that in real life? So I created the sound machine, and the sound machine, it's not a really original idea, but the way we designed it up, so what didn't look so tacky, is just in a little handheld device, it's got 16 buttons, and each button gives you a different sound. So you can say, everyone, ladies and gentlemen, here's John Williams. Or, like, if you're at home and you want to feel like you're funny, you can tell a joke and they'll always laugh. So you can say, my wife, she came home the other night and she said, darling, take me somewhere expensive. So I took her to the petrol station. What's good is they always find it funny. And this has got, it's really good value. And it's perfect for meetings. It's a really good little fun thing, and people seem to love it. And even one, as John said, this is one of the times it won Gift of the Year. And funny, there's an actual, it's a big industry. The gift industry is worth £8 billion in this country alone. So they have a big award ceremony for it. So it won that. So I thought, okay, great, that's good. But we didn't stop there. We extended it out. And look what we've done. We did the horror version, which is the black one. We've done a cartoon version. And we've even done a football version for World Cup. And they've all got sort of really good fun sounds on it, like this one. So I should use that at the end, really, shouldn't I? So as you can see, take an idea and extend it out if it's successful. Onwards. Trick 7. Aim for an impossible goal. People always say, oh, you can't do it. And the old cliche, which is, if you shoot for the stars, you'll reach the moon. It's true. Just start. And it's often good to start with an impossible goal. I started with an impossible goal, and this is the TV show that I made that ended in a scandal. And here is the front page that ended the scandal. This is the front page of The Sun, and as you can see, it says fake TV scandal. Channel 4 man aged 30 posed as pupil. And this came about, this is the end of a year's culmination of events. At the beginning, right at the start, I said to Channel 4, I want to make a TV show about issues we can all relate to, and especially ones I can relate to, because when I was younger, I used to look very young for my age. So I thought, I want to explore how people treat you differently depending on how you look, and also how important young people are, and how perhaps our education system is failing them, because I really think we should be teaching them things that are important, like how to be a good parent, how to be a brilliant lover, and how to be an entrepreneur, not geography. Sorry if anyone teaches geography. Geography's got its place, but, you know, maybe next to how to be an entrepreneur. But I wanted to do all these issues, and Channel 4 said, that's fine, but we want something bigger than that. And I said, okay, how about this then? I'm going to try and go to a school and pretend to be a pupil and tell them that we're going to follow a pupil, but actually it's going to be me when I'm 30 with braces on my teeth and my hair gel down. They said, Shed, you'll never do it. You'll never get away with it. And I did get away with it, and I spent a whole term at a school, and I was a 16-year-old boy for the second time round. And here is my report that I got. I got a good report, but a tiny bit embarrassing. Because I was running a TV company at the same time, I got an E in business. It shows you how hard A-levels are, because I really tried. During this time, I was at the school pretending to be a 16-year-old boy, and every day being amazed that it worked. I had a 17th birthday party, and I dressed up as Peter Pan, because it was fancy dress, and here is me as Peter Pan. And this is a photo that one of the pupils took, that when the story broke in the end, when I told the school, we had the most incredible documentary in the bag. It wasn't just about me, it was about the young people in the school, and we followed different stories about one guy was coming out, one girl was really clever, and she was about to be a brilliant businesswoman. And it was about nourishing young people. But unfortunately, when I told them the truth that I was 30, I learned an important lesson about life and business, which is never tell lies. Because as soon as you establish you're a liar, you cast doubt on everything going forward. So it's really, really important to be reliable, to do what you say, and to never, ever lie in both personal and business. Because otherwise, everything crumbles. So I tried to explain to these the lovely people in the school and the pupils why I wanted to do the documentary, but of course, my words were like tissue paper going into the air. And this photo ended up on an article of the News of the World. And this shows you how sometimes press and reality doesn't quite match up. But of course, if you put your head above the parapet, you have to expect everything. And this says, secret drug shame of Channel 4's Peter Pan faker. And the truth of this article is, and it says the truth in the actual body, but the headline refers to something sort of terrible that I'm doing. The truth was, one of the kids in the school asked me while I was at the school, Shed, do you want a spliff? And I said, no, I don't smoke cannabis because I don't smoke because I've got a bad chest, which is true. Weak constitution. And so then when the journalist interviewed that kid, the journalist said, oh, did you ask what I thought of smoking cannabis? And he did, and I said, yeah, I think it's fine, because I do think it's fine. And that turned into my secret joke shame. And hilarious, I've only ever done cocaine once, and that, I sort of loved it, and I thought, no, I better not do it anymore, because my brain's my biggest asset. So I haven't got a drug shame, but as you can see, it can spiral. And this was a massive story for about a week, because it was a slow news week, and it was all over the press, all over the broadsheet, and of course their Daily Mail, very angered and outraged. There it says in The Independent that Channel 4 had to scrap the film in the end, and so the school took legal action against me, and I lost $200,000, I was persona non grata in television for a while, although it was a strange double effect, because the TV industry sort of held me in high regard for doing it and pulling it off, and so I was sort of a hero, but not publicly. Which is a strange place to be, because I didn't have a job. But it was nice, it was fine, it all came out in the wash, and it's the best chapter in my book. Good plug there, Shed, good plug. So at the time I had to go on the run, and it was quite frightening. My family were doorstepped by TV news crews, my flat was staked out, so I had to go on the run and stay in lots of different hotels. And so they got the photo there, from an earlier article when I worked on The Big Breakfast. And again, it's a lovely example of how press and reality doesn't exist. That article says, who is Caprice begging this nerd for a date? The nerd they refer to is me. And the answer is, he picks the next Big Breakfast star. And the truth about this was, when Caprice, the supermodel, came over to this country, I had a phone call from her agent, and I was working on The Big Breakfast quite high up, and the agent said, Shed, how would you fancy doing a little film on a new gorgeous blonde model in her lingerie next Wednesday? I had to think about it for about a millisecond, and I was like, yeah, that sounds good. So I persuaded my bosses, and I went along, and I became friends with Caprice and the agent, friends in a showbiz sense, you know how it is. And so then one day she invited me to a party, left a message on my answering machine. I couldn't go to the party because I was going out with my friends that week, and so I had to decline. And someone in the office heard about this. They were that night talking to someone in the press, and the next day I found the paparazzi outside the office, and it blew up into that. But it was amazing. It really raised my stock with the women in the office. if you ever want to be alpha male, get yourself linked to a supermodel. It's a good tip. Nearly there now. Trick 8. Merge two unrelated ideas. I would say creativity really is just about forcing two things that have never been together before together. You can often just do that and come up with something new. Cool. So I took that, which as you all know, what's that? Very good, that's a loofah, and that's a loofah mitt, and I pushed it together with a political personality from yesteryear, so I made the Martin Luther King. Yeah, terrible pun, isn't it? And quite offensive. So, here it is, and I, what was amazing about it, on the back I put, I have a clean. And what's fun about these things, when you're doing them, often unexpected events happen. So when I got the first sample back, I rubbed Martin on my leg, and some of Martin came off on my leg, which I want my novelty products to be good quality, and I want every interaction you have with me to be a high one. Rather, I know we're not talking about saving the world, but I want to do a good job. It's all important for brand building, isn't it? So I had to invent a new process, which is now we heat brand his face onto the loofah, so we burn onto the loofah, so his face will never come off, I can reassure you. The only thing is, though, even though I am proud of this product, when you do get it wet, instead of Martin Luther, it looks more like Barry White, and maybe Barry White with some sort of stroke, but nevertheless, it's not bad. Yeah, harsh, isn't it? Yeah, very good. Here's a trick. Take a success from one part of your business and replicate it. A bit similar to extend your range, but actually, you can do this. Take a success from another business. So if you see that someone in a rival business, or even in a business that's nothing to do with you, has done a fantastic PR strategy or has done a new product, you can often adapt that for your needs. So I took the Martin Luther and I just thought, what else can I do in that range? And I came up with a napkin coal. Perfect. Yeah, it groans all around. A really useful tip, if you're ever out of inspiration, instead of looking at Google, which we all do, take a Yellow Pages, take an encyclopedia, open them at random pages and see what comes up, and then force those two things together and try and come up with a solution for whatever you're trying to come up with. So whether it be you're trying to think of a new present to give to your loved one, or whether it's a new business idea or product, this often sends your mind down really interesting routes, and all it does is it just breaks us out of our monotony, really, and that's really important. Other tips. When you're brainstorming, beware of the word no. I'm sure you've all heard of this. Instead of no, and if I pitch you the idea and I say, hey guys, I've got a great idea for a novelty product, it's the Osama bin Ladle. Instead of saying no, Shed, you're an idiot, please say yes, and maybe you could say it's the Baghdadi of all utensils. So always important to go to people that say yes and rather than no, because a no can quash your idea much too easily. In the same vein, you must identify around you people who are negnets. Now these are people I call negative magnets, and you know those sort of people. They don't mean it often, but you'll tell them an idea and just by the twitch of their face, or even verbally, they'll quash your idea and they'll make you feel awful about it, and then it'll often just go off into the ether and never to be seen again. And that's a crime. It's idea abuse. Sorry, I'm amusing myself. And I think it is a terrible crime, because it means things don't ever grow and learn, and you don't learn, and things always change with ideas, so just let it breathe. And so it's very important to surround yourself with positive people, so you'll have someone like that who unconditionally supports you. It doesn't even matter if your idea is rubbish, because it will develop. So whatever you do, avoid negnets. Another way to bring an idea to life, especially if you're in a company, locate an ally, someone who believes in you and your worth and who loves your ideas. If you can tell your ideas to, or when you come across a challenge with bringing your idea to life, you can go to them. So it's a sort of like a mentor, but not as formalized. So this is somebody who you believe in and you respect their opinion, and you can say to them even, look, when I bring you an idea, I want you to say yes and, I want you to help me develop it, because that's really important. Very, very important to bring an idea to life in a small scale. Much easier for an idea to be quashed, just verbally or in your mind. Bring it to life. So do a really crude prototype, a really crude visualization, a blueprint. Get someone else to do these things for you. Do a dry run of it. Whatever it is, bring it to life in some way, and ideally prove it works. Because then the people who need their support to help you actually get it out there can't say no. There's nowhere for them to go. Unfortunately, there's only one person who has to take responsibility for your idea. This is the slightly depressing part, because it would be nice if you could give everything away, but you can give some of the responsibility away, but ultimately it's down to you. You must drive your idea through. And I'll tell you a bit, we're coming up to the end now, I'll tell you the trick for a way of keeping that energy going to be able to drive that idea through. Just because you can doesn't mean you always should with ideas. Here's an idea, I want your opinion on it. I took this novelty product prototype to a company. They said, we love it, Shed, we want to make it, but I don't know whether you think it's morally reprehensible. And I said no for the first time in my life. Check this out, okay? Here it is. This is an idea. It's called the Scare Your Parents Kit, and basically it's a kit of parts for you to put around your bedroom if you're a teenager while you go to school for your parents to discover. here it is. So I made this prototype myself, as you can see, and I didn't have any heroin in my place, so I had to get demerara sugar and put that on the spoon. It's come out quite well, hasn't it? So you can imagine that the mum would be going around the bedroom and find this stuff. And I also thought in the pack I'd have an STI report as well, that you could leave around. So and the mother would not only think you're a drug addict, she'd everyone's shaking her head. They also think you're riddled with disease. And someone said to me once in one of these talks, Shed, you should do a specific one for girls. And you can imagine what they said I should put in. So you have a positive pregnancy test as well. So the mother would not only think, oh my goodness, my daughter is on drugs, she's riddled with disease, she's pregnant. Fuck! So a company said to me, yeah, we love it, let's make it. But I said no. Do you think I was right to say no?
Yes.
Oh, very good, you're a very moral crowd. Sometimes everyone goes, no. But I thought it had the potential to cause harm, to real harm. So I think it's a fun idea, but not, we shouldn't do it. Just to wrap up, opportunities are everywhere. Even in times of crisis, often in times of crisis, in fact, you get the most inspiration. So everyone was banging on about the economic downturn, and everyone probably thought of the idea I'm going to show you, but I actually did it. I made Credit Crunch breakfast cereal. And it took a long time, and I never thought I'd be in front of an intellectual crowd talking about extrusion methods, but here I am. And I had to find a special extruding machine, and only a few of them in the world. So I found one, and I made these different symbols, the pound, dollar, euro, and the yen, in wheat. And what I did was, on the packet, I put the yen, the euro, and the dollar next to each other, so it says yes. So subliminally, if you approach the shelf, you'll think, yes, I want to buy that, come on. Layers upon layers. Very good, very good. And this caught the imagination of the press, and it did really well. And so I saw that out, but obviously that's got a limited time frame, because we're on the up now, aren't we? So here's the one. Here's the trick I was talking about, really, how to keep yourself excited. You've just got to really internally talk to yourself and notice what you think about the most in life. And when you're chasing an idea down, in order for you to complete a finish on it, you've got to think about the end goal, and that end goal has got to excite you to such a degree that it will take you through all the challenges that will happen. So for me, it's my novelty goods. So when I think about making the gaydar and being able to point it at someone and it telling them whether they're gay, straight, or maybe, in my little life, in my world, that rocks my world. So when all the problem with design and the chip and all of that happens, I just keep in mind, no, it's going to be cool, it's going to be cool, keep going, keep going. And that's really, really important. I think it's vital that you focus on something that deeply, deeply moves you in some way. Because then, actually, you'll just overcome all hurdles and it'll be natural. And I sort of call that the theory of sexy business, because it's the idea that you get something that really turns you on. And I'll finish with my last product, and it's an idea that really turned me on. And when I was doing a talk like this, someone came up to me and said, Shed, I run a very big gift website called Firebox, and would you be interested to know what is the biggest selling gift year on year? I said, yeah, I'd be fascinated. And he said, can you guess? I said, no, I don't know, actually. And he said, it's this, remote control helicopters. And the reason why remote control helicopters sell so well year on year is because young boys buy them, and also older boys, which we call men in our society, also buy them. So they sell really well. So he said to me, Shed, can you think up a saucy helicopter? I was like, yeah, I can. He said, why don't you do a flying pig? And I said, no, and I that's not really me, and I think it's probably been done, and it has been done. And he said, why don't you do a flying willy? And I said, even for me, that's a bit crass. So I came up with an idea, and my idea is very specific, and it's a specific word, and here it is. It's the F word. I'll move the slider on. And I'm going to give you a demonstration of it in action. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the flying fuck. So for the first time in history, you can actually give a flying fuck. And here it is in action. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I really hope that's maybe entertained and left you with some tips as well. And really grateful for your attention. And just remember how fantastic your brain is and how anything is possible. I've been Shed Samo. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Shed.
Thanks, John.
Thanks very much, Shed. That was brilliant. OK, so hopefully you're inspired and amused and several other things now. What we're going to do is we're going to take a 20-minute break, and do come up and chat to Shed. You're very open to talking to people, aren't you?
Yes.
Shed's always interested in talking about ideas, and you can have a look at his full range of products here. You don't think you've got any spares to sell, which is the sad thing, have you?
No, but all available on my website.
Yeah, so you can all get them from Shed's, from ideasman.co.uk. And I really do recommend the book, because it will give you this experience of going through, and he makes it sound easy from the way he's described it just now, but every single one of those things had enormous amounts of setbacks as you read in the book, and took an enormous amount of doggedness. So what we're going to do in the second half is, when you come back, if you've got an idea for something, for a gift or for a book or for a, I don't know, maybe even a TV program, since Shed knows a fair bit about TV, then we're going to bring you up, and in just 2 minutes you've got to say, this is my idea, so you've got to be good at explaining it quickly in one sentence or two, and then say what you need help with or what you're stuck on. And then Shed will give you some ideas, and I might give you some ideas. No one else who's got a really good idea or contact will chip in. So it's live brainstorming time. But you might want to practice in the break going, this is my project, or this is my idea, and this is what I'm stuck on, or this is what I need help with. And so you can do it really slickly. It's a really useful skill.
Brilliant.
Okay, so we'll see you in the second half, in about 20 minutes or so.